Hi, and welcome to the State of Shakespeare. I'm Jim Elliott.
And I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And today we are joined by the company members of The Porch Room.
The Porch Room is an award-winning theater and film company, and they are producing the world premiere of Antony and Cleopatra, Infinite Lives, premiering this week at the New York International Fringe Festival. Antony and Cleopatra, Infinite Lives is a new play by J. Michael DeAngelis and Pete Berry, incorporating original text by William Shakespeare and inspired by the violence of Tahrir Square. It played a sold-out run in last year's Philly Fringe at the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology.
Joining us are Pete Berry and J. Michael DeAngelis, the playwrights and the producers, John Dowgan, the director, Olivia Ratigliano, the costume designer, and Nazla Sarpkaya, the lead actress in the play. Welcome, all of you.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about how this whole thing got started. It sounds like an incredible project.
It started with the venue. As you said, we got to do this last year at the University of Pennsylvania's Museum of Anthropology and Archaeology. My non-theatrical job during the day is to work for the university. And I'm also very involved with the Underground Shakespeare Company, which is an independent theater company affiliated with the university. And a friend of mine, who's an archaeologist, said, boy, have you ever thought about maybe doing Antony and Cleopatra in the Egyptian wing at the museum? And it is a glorious space with an actual sphinx in the center of the room. It's a very theatrical space. And I said, boy, that would be a great idea. But of course, Pete and I are also playwrights and just thought, well, maybe there's something unique we could be doing with this story. And this was in the summer of 2011 when the idea first started to brew. And of course, then things started to get really tense in Egypt and really have not stopped being tense. But it just seemed too obvious. Here's a story about war-torn Egypt thousands of years ago, and now it's happening again. There's got to be a story to tell there, and we can tell it in a really amazing space.
Pete Berry.
Yeah, Mike did bring this idea of putting up Antony and Cleopatra in the museum in the Egyptian wing in front of their Sphinx, and it was a great idea. And I, being the extremely poor student that I was in college, had to go back and reread Antony and Cleopatra. And one of the things that impressed upon me from reading it was how Egypt was presented as this other place. The English audience who Shakespeare was writing for were presumably supposed to identify with the Romans. That was the world that the English were supposed to be familiar with. You were supposed to see Antony and Octavius, and that world was the English. Egypt was this foreign other. There was something about putting that up, the Roman perspective, in the Egyptian wing that didn't quite jive for me, and I think that spilled over into this idea of, can we show a company putting on this traditional performance of Antony and Cleopatra and then having Egypt usurp the Roman perspective? And of course, that flowed right into the Egyptian revolution that's going on right now that we did work into the script eventually.
So how much of the Shakespearean script are you actually using?
It's an extremely truncated version, but you get the entirety of the story. Mike, do you know exactly which scenes that we're doing?
We did drop all of what I believe is Shakespeare's Act 3, which is all about Caesar and Antony fighting with Pompey.
Right.
That didn't quite gel with what we needed. So that part is dropped. But the rest, you get at least a taste of the rest of that story. We really tried to streamline it. I mean, I feel like if I were like a Hollywood producer looking at this, I'd be like, let's just streamline this story. Just get the main characters. Mm-hmm. But we do try and follow Antony and Cleopatra, and then the meat that really parallels nicely with what's happening today is the battle with Octavius. But I think that if you watch it, you really do get the full through line of the play.
Olivia Ratigliano, you have a very daunting job, I would assume, since the original production had the background of this glorious museum set, and you've moved this to the New York International Fringe Festival, where you're performing in, I assume, less grandiose environment.
Yes, it was a thrill to work in the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology. I did not have to build any set materials. I mean, there are numerous references in the script to a sphinx, and I felt great because I did not have to build one out of stone. Now that we're in the Lynn Redgrave Theater on Bleecker Street in New York, while it is very lovely, it is most certainly not a restored wing of a museum. So John actually took care of the set, and we actually have a slideshow that transpires during a portion of the play, but we also have a backdrop that looks like a museum. But as far as the costumes are concerned, as the play leaps through different time periods and aesthetics, it's very important that the costumes sort of keep up and track this movement. So Antony and Cleopatra Infinite Lives is sort of three plays in one. It's about a theater company putting on a traditional Antony and Cleopatra and then switching it halfway through to represent the current situation in Egypt. And, you know, therefore it gives sort of two perspectives on the politics of a theater company and modern politics on an international stage. So the first section of the costumes had to really reflect this sort of misappropriated notion of Egypt and sort of convey this opulent Elizabeth Taylor-esque aesthetic. And then, of course, the modern dress had to really represent what soldiers today would be wearing. So there's a really big dichotomy. And I think as some of these characters are dressed on stage in costumes that are really aligned with certain time periods, and then we bring in characters who are in costumes from the other aesthetic, it really adds this creation of Egypt as a theoretical space, regardless of what the venue looks like.
Going from modern day Egypt to Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra must have been an interesting challenge for both for you, John, and for you, Nazla.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was fun.
Well, at the same time, it's crazy how relevant everything is when you think about it. Everybody always talks about it, but Shakespeare did write amazing stuff that you can get them parallel. I think most of the time, the scenes that we use from Shakespeare are parallel to what is going on in the modern scenes. And I think John is really, really amazing of how the transactions between those scenes were made, I think, very clear. And I think it worked. It was challenging in the beginning, but I think we really made it work. And it's really actually really, really fun. It's more fun than doing just a straight modern play.
Certainly you have Shakespeare's language. And how did you bridge the gap between the heightened language of Shakespeare and the more modern everyday language in Egypt today?
First of all, the first thing you need to do is find the right actors. If you find the right actors, the language will take care of itself. And balancing presentational language of Shakespeare, the more modern language that Pete and Mike wrote, and the blend, the more modern take on the verse that starts to come into play in the latter half of the show when play within a play takes a more politically charged bent. It's actually three different ways to approach the text. And it sounds obvious, but the language takes care of itself if you just take the time at the outset to sit down and do the table work on it. It's beautifully written. It's written for the way people speak. The sentences are structured so that the beats and the pauses come naturally if you just understand what it is you're saying.
Absolutely. Now, it's called Antony and Cleopatra Infinite Lives. We know Antony and Cleopatra. Tell us about Infinite Lives.
Sure. Titling this piece was a long and complicated route.
I would say argument.
Yeah, we had many, many back and forth, Pete and I. It was on our drafts for a long time, just Cleopatra Project. But as we researched Shakespeare and as we researched Egypt, Shakespeare was using for his source for the historical information Plutarch's book Parallel Lives. And when I saw that really excited me because we have a play here that is set up in a parallel structure. So in my excitement, I called Pete. I said, Pete, this is Antony and Cleopatra, Parallel Lives. And Pete went, no, I don't think so. makes it sound like they've got parallel lives. That I don't think so. So then we went back to the Shakespeare and we thought there's got to be a phrase, something in there that really speaks to what we're talking about. And so the soothsayer, who appears early in the play, says, in nature's infinite book, a little can I read. And I thought, ooh, that gives me a chill. So let's call it Antony and Cleopatra, nature's infinite book. And I immediately went, no, let's not call it that either. But take those two things and mash them together, infinite lives, that works.
That's a really long way of saying it's a mashup.
Yeah.
Yeah, one element of the play that does get emphasized over and over again is the idea of inventing yourself, Cleopatra inventing herself, the story inventing itself, people trying to control the narrative, and the infinite ways and variety of how people are represented and how their stories are controlled both by themselves and by others, that also has a lot to do with what we're exploring in this piece.
Yeah, if I latched on to one thing in the Shakespearean text that excited me, it's that Shakespeare is very self-aware in writing this play, because Cleopatra, as her world crumbles around her, talks about how she has to take control. Otherwise, the Romans are going to write her story and they're going to write bad plays about her, and she's going to be played by a boy, and she hates that idea. So I think he's incredibly self-aware in that moment, and that's what we latched onto, and that's what we decided Nasima, who is our contemporary modern character that Nazla plays, would also be concerned about controlling her reputation throughout the course of history.
It is a very interesting take on how the attitudes of the artists who are continuing to present these classical pieces will continue to influence our opinions of them and our takes on them.
Anthony and Cleopatra, Infinite Lives explores the interaction between two periods of Egyptian history separated by thousands of years, and places Shakespeare's work on a continuum from Plutarch all the way to modern-day drama. Anthony and Cleopatra, Infinite Lives, has been named one of the top must-see shows at the New York International Fringe Festival by Theater Mania. You can catch one of the remaining performances this Friday, August 16th, Sunday, August 18th, and Sunday, August 25th, at the Lynn Redgrave Theater at 45 Bleecker Street. Thank you so much for joining us, Pete Berry, J. Michael DeAngelis, John Daugan, Olivia Ritigliano, and Nazla Sarpkaya.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And this is The State of Shakespeare.